Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is the new Savage Nation. It is the new Savage Nation. Yes, we're going to talk about the Islamo Klux Klan today, affectionately called Icicle, ISIS. Do you like lemon ices? Do you like orange ices? What happened to America? I don't know. Where did it go? Where did Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin go? Where did all the baritones go? Turn them off. But about a year ago, McCain was out doing a town hall meeting, and he was saying this and that, and everyone knew he was a traitor at that point. And a Marine stood up named Blaine Cooper, and he told John McCain he would have him arrested for treason. Listen to Blaine Cooper in clip two.
If I was in a position of power or authority, I would have you all arrested and tried for treason against my country under the grounds of 18 U.S.C. 2381 treason U.S. Code. Whoever owing allegiance to the United States levies war against them or adheres to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort within the United States or elsewhere, is guilty of treason. That is the code.
That didn't stop McCain from continuing his juggernaut against America by wanting to arm the so-called Free Syrian Army, which is ISIS, along with Obama, who's been trying to arm, in fact, probably has armed ISIS. I've told you that yesterday. What would Frank Sinatra and his Rat Pack advise with regard to the treatment of ISIS? That's what I'm thinking. What would America and the men of America in the late 50s and early 60s advise with regard to ISIS? Do you think it would be the walk softly and carry a limp stick approach of Barack Obama? I don't think so. I kind of think it would be, you know what, to the walls. I can't use the first word because it's a family show. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think they would recommend negotiating with ISIS. That's unless they were our allies, which apparently they are of certain people in power. So I have sound today that's so good that I may as well start with the second soundbite that's even better than the first soundbite, which was superb on the Savage Nation, which is the emergence of a conservative group, which is now a party in England called UKIP. They're anti-immigration. They're anti-Muslim. They're pro-England. They're pro-saving England. They want to save England before it's gone. The number one boy's name in England is Mohammed. How do you like that? What if you woke up and heard that the most popular boy's name in Saudi Arabia was Jerry? That ain't happening. You think you'll ever wake up to the day that the most popular boy's name in Saudi Arabia will be Jimmy? No, I don't think so. But because of multiculturalism forced down our throat by Bill and Hillary Clinton and their minions of psychotics, and 40 years of this insanity, the West has almost finished. The blitzkrieg of Islam has now virtually rolled over across the Western civilization. It's almost over. Not quite. And it's not changing in this country. It's getting far worse under you-know-who, under the O-word. But in England, there's hope. They don't like that Muhammad is the most popular boy's name in England. They don't like it at all, and they're sick of it. And they know they had it done to them by the multiculturalists. Listen to clip three. Here's the new leader of the Western world. Listen to three.
We've seen increased radicalization within the United Kingdom. Much of this, I'm afraid to say, is a self-inflicted wound. We've had four decades of state-sponsored multiculturalism. We've actually encouraged people not to come together and to be British, but to live separately, to live apart.
Now, doesn't that sound like Obama, encouraging blacks to live separately and to live apart? Doesn't that sound like Eric Holder, who in the face of ISIS and the beheadings goes down to Missouri and gives a speech just now trying to agitate more riots in this country? Infidels, please listen to the next soundbite of the new leader of the Western world in clip number four. Hold on. The man has a name. His name is Farage. Never forget it. F-A-R-A-G-E. He's the anti-Obama in clip four. Listen.
We even had the last Archbishop of Canterbury suggesting that Sharia law would be acceptable in British cities. So I'm afraid we have been weak and we have not been muscular in standing up and saying to people, we are a Christian country. We have a Christian constitution, a Judeo-Christian culture. We've allowed our schools to be infiltrated. Our prisons, you know, are now perhaps where jihadism is on the march more rapidly than anywhere else. Much of this we've done to ourselves.
I pray to God that the UKIP party throws the bums out. And I pray that they deport everyone in the prisons who is an Islamist. No trial. Get them out of there. Send them where they belong. Send them back to their country of origin with their whole family. Get them off the welfare dole. Do you realize most of these people who are planning to destroy our society are living here on welfare? Do you understand that? You understand walking around? I'm going to slow down. I don't think you're following me. I get the feeling that I'm at the dance and I left the girl at the side of the floor. I was dancing so quickly that her hand slipped out of my hand. The audience is the girl. And she's on the side of the dance floor, and she doesn't know where I went, but I'm still doing the whirling dervish around the middle of the radio talk dance floor here. So let's slow it down a bit. Remember to talk about Joan Rivers? Would you like me to talk about that instead?
Ooh, Joan Rivers. One of the smartest women in the world. She passed away.
We'll hear about that now for 4 days. This is the theme song of the Obama administration, Loco Motion. I mean, what would you say granting amnesty to illegal aliens is if not Loco Motion? You know, if Jerry Lewis were listening to the show, he'd love it, but I don't even know. Does he get it in Las Vegas? I wish they'd call. I have big listeners. They make believe they don't know me. They don't listen to me. They never call. They never write. I never hear from them. But that's the thing, is if they call in once in a while. You know, we once had Clint Eastwood call the show. Never again. He learned his lesson. The next we heard from Clint Eastwood was when he was... The next we heard... I don't think he worked in Hollywood after. No, he's done some very good movies since then. But the next we saw of Clint Eastwood, he did one of the greatest stunts in history. Remember the empty chair? That almost killed his career. Oh, yeah, the government... the 400-foot yacht guy. Are you kidding me? So the biggest news in the world, the biggest news in the world right now is that Joan Rivers is dead after the endoscopy. What can we say about that one? Nothing. Don't call me. Please, whatever you do. You're not supposed to speak harshly of the dead, as I hope you won't do when I'm dead. But please, no negative comments about her. None. But I have nothing positive to say about Joan Rivers. Must I speak in reverential tones about Joan Rivers? Who do you think I am, Anderson Cooper? Who do you think I am, Wolf Rivers? I'm not Wolf River. I'm not going to speak nice. I'm not going to say anything about her. She's the kind of woman I ran from in New York. That's the only nice thing I could say about Joan Rivers. If it wasn't for women like her, I would still be living in New York, and I'd probably be a dead dentist by now. I probably would have gone to dental school and be dead at age 52. No callers I could see. Oh, God. What's this Airbnb rental? How do you pronounce that? I can say Uber, I understand that. But what's Airbnb? ARBNB, where you rent your house out for a night? What idiot would rent his house out for the night with bed bugs on the rise? Can you explain that to me? Are people that stupid that you'd let strangers live in your house and sleep in your bed and use your towels for a few bucks a night? Neil, how do you pronounce Airbnb? Airbnb. Airbnb. Airbnb, and that's where you rent your house out for the night. Yeah, I would never do that. I wouldn't even let a relative sleep in my house for the night. I usually get them a hotel room. I am such a germaphobe that I wouldn't let a relative sleep in my house if they visited. I mean, there is a Holiday Inn and a Travelodge within 10 miles. Yeah, right. Are you kidding me? Airbnb. Yeah, right. Airbnb. Is that how you pronounce it? Isn't it Airbnb? It's like a Jewish word, Airbnb. He has like Gesundheit Airbnb. Oh, my. So let's see. What's in the news? It's so bad. Oh, here's the San Francisco Symphony opening night gala where all of the every time I see these pictures of these hags in San Francisco go to these openings, it reminds me of like I'm living in the far west. It is so not trendy. These women are so over the hill that they don't know where the hill was that they went over. And they buy these $25,000 gowns that they don't even return. Can you imagine? They buy gowns that you can't even find a tag for. They have them made by the same people who make Hillary Clinton her outfits, to give you some idea how great the designers are. San Francisco Symphony opening night gala. You say, I'm jealous. I could have gone. Why would I have wanted to go to that last night to see old women in gowns? Old women in gowns that are embarrassing? Photo by Komal Shah walks to the dining room as dinner is served at the San Francisco Symphony Gala at Davies Symphony Hall on Wednesday, September 3rd. Let's see who else. Let's see the other wonderful elite of San Francisco. Let's see. Here they are. Those who've given us the homelessness, the drug addiction, the multiculturalism, the psychosis that we live through, defecation in the subways. Who are these two? Dee Dee Wilsey and Juliet Di Barbigni prepare to enter the San Francisco Symphony opening night gala. Wilsey wore an Oscar de la Renta gown. Sounds more like she rented the gown. Is he still living? I thought Oscar de la Renta died when Jimmy Carter was born. What is this? Oscar de la Renta gown and Barbigni wore Gucci? Take a look at that dress. You got to look at these pictures. You got to see how out of town the city is. It's one of the reasons I love living here. It's so out of town, it's a pleasure. It's unique. It's refreshing. I would rather see a girl from San Rafael wearing a wife beater shirt that she borrowed from her husband than these gowns. I'd rather see a good-looking girl in a wife beater shirt than these gowns. I can't believe the stuff these women wear. Is there anyone out? Is there a woman listening to this show who agrees with me that the costumes and get-ups that these women put on there for these events here in San Francisco are embarrassing? They're so unfashionable. Okay, they look like drapes from a movie theater that was sold in Stockton that was then like hemmed. Alison Spear and Vanessa Getty. Oh, another distinguished family of the Bay Area. Oh, yeah, another distinguished family. Pose on the red carpet. They create red carpets for themselves. Opening night gala. I once made the mistake of going to a museum opening night gala. I never went back. That was enough for me once. Norman and Nora Stone are another prize couple. Looks like she's leading him around by the bow tie. You know what, when a guy is old is when he's carrying his wife's pocketbook. That's a drum shot. They're known as pocketbook carriers. I'm not doing the news right now. I can't do it. I cannot do this. I cannot take it. The missing planes and the Libby, I did it yesterday. I was ahead of the curve on that. I don't want to do it. I can't do it. Nikki Hilton. Oh, my God. You got to go to this photo. She put on some weight, man. She's a heifer now. Nikki Hilton, Sloane Barnett, and Kathy Hilton. Look at the outfits on these women. No, you got to see these pictures. She must have put on 60 pounds since the last symphony. Nikki Hilton, Sloane Barnett, and Kathy Hilton posed for a photo at the San Francisco Symphony opening night gala. Nikki Hilton has just released a book. Oh, man, I can't wait to get that. I'm going to rush out to the bookstore. It's got to be much better. Oh, no, it's got to be better than Stop the Coming Civil War. Released a book of fashion tips. You're in the middle of ISIS, multiculturalism, amnesty, riots, floods, pestilence, disease. What else does the Bible call for? She's released a book on fashion tips. A coloring book. She released a coloring book. I see. A coloring book for grown-up women. Let me see the next one. I want to be cattier than you. Is there any other pictures? I like to see the men, the old men. Rose Fisher and Jessica Slore, never heard of them. Oh, that's a bad. This is a bad one. They got her from behind. Bad shot. Not good. This photographer hated them. Not good. Tanya Powell arrives. Very nice. I'm running late. I am not. See, I told you what happens. I have a system for radio now that nobody in the history of radio understands. I was the one who pioneered putting dumbbells in my studio 20 years ago. I pump the iron during the show. That's number one for the oxygenation. But I've upgraded it now to a hot shower on my head just before the show. And now I've added a third component, which will make this the greatest show in the history of radio for the next 20 years. I intend to do this till I'm 96, even though I'm not 76. But another 20 years of this show, I take two spoonfuls of a certain component, which I'm not going to tell you about. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCOIN. find these internet startup companies like Uber, you know, a lot of guys are using them. I feel bad for the cab drivers, but what if you get into an airplane and they start having pilots that are from Uber and they're from Yemen? I don't think so, but this Airbnb, which I call Airbnb, who would rent their apartment or house to a stranger for a night for a few bucks? Do you have any Airbnb or Airbnb horror stories? I think that's a good topic, because if otherwise I'm going back to the San Francisco newspaper and the fashion, the dresses. I've never seen anything as gauche in my life. Here's one, and then I'll stop. It's the number 15 in the panel. Belinda Berry wears a repurposed evening gown. Ah, my fax machine in the middle of my show. You ready for this? Belinda Berry wears a repurposed evening gown turned into a hoop skirt at the San Francisco Symphony opening night gala. It looks like a lampshade from Goodwill that was turned upside down and a blouse knitted to it. Who designs these things? It has to be gay guys who hate women and make fun of them and mock them. There's something wrong with this picture. Nobody would wear this stuff if they had any sense of taste. But then again, it's San Francisco. Music director Michael Tilson Thomas and his partner Joshua Robeson. God forbid he should be with a wife. God forbid in San Francisco he should have a woman as a wife.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage.
I've blown through two stop sets already. I can't believe it. It's the stuff I take just before the show. I cannot give away the name of it because then you'll ask me to buy it. It's jam. It's a French jam. It's so good. It has no sugar in it because it's all fructose to begin with, but it's blueberry. You know what happens when I take this jam before the show? Don't buy that cheap Schmendrick jam that they sell in the markets. That's pure sucrose. It's going to get you sick, give you diabetes. The fructose is not much better, but it burns a little slower than sucrose. The molecules are a little more complex, so it's a little slower to metabolize. The thing is, the blueberries were used during World War II. Did you know the blueberry jam was used by RAF pilots in World War II for night flying? You didn't know that. Blueberries are phenomenal for it. They call it bilberry, but it was a form of blueberry. And then they put out bilberry capsules in the health food business, which, by the way, I once saved a woman from macular degeneration 20 years ago. A dear friend who was a famous surgeon's mother was in her 80s. She had macular degeneration. And I put her on these bilberry capsules. They were these were made in Germany, though. These are pharmaceutical grade. And she swore her macular degeneration, the condition improved. So I just eat the blueberry jam before the show, and I jam right through the 3 hours. It's unbelievable. I just jam right through it. So I asked, look, we got the news. The multiculturalism has destroyed the West. Let's hope that this guy Farage and UKIP kicks them out in plain English. You start with the jails. And he says, we have a Christian constitution, a Judeo-Christian culture. We allowed our schools to be infiltrated by the Muslims. Our prisons, are now perhaps where jihadism is on the march more rapidly. And he said, much of this we've done to ourselves. Well, you start by going in the prisons and deport them. That's all. You have mass trials and throw them out of your country. That sends a message, a nice one. They want a riot, throw them out. That's all. And then clean the country up. Then maybe the most popular boy's name in England may be John instead of Muhammad. Maybe you could save the country by understanding they're taking you over. Now, I mean, maybe this is shocking for you to hear. Maybe you need to be shocked in order to understand what's going on in this country. While the hags in San Francisco put on dresses they found in a Goodwill store from 30 years ago. Look at this story. They found the skeleton, the remains of a new dinosaur from Patagonia. And many of you don't know where Patagonia is. It's adjacent to San Francisco. And it's so big. It's estimated to have weighed 65 tons. And was 85 feet long, bigger than any of the animals that ever walked the earth. Can you imagine that? Found the specimen in Argentina's southern Patagonia in 05. They think it's the most massive dinosaur, but there are comparatively sized beasts elsewhere. But that's the heaviest land animal whose weight during life can be calculated directly next to a Rosie O'Donnell with a standard technique. I mean, because it's not alive. But it is the heaviest land animal whose weight during life can be calculated directly, other than Rosie O'Donnell, with a standard technique that analyzes bones of the upper limbs. And the bones indicate it was still growing when it died. I'm very interested in this kind of stuff, the creature. This kind of creature, to think about that. What walked the earth before the society folks in San Francisco walked the earth. Just think about that, the size of these dinosaurs. Dinosaurs. Now, of course, there are people listening to the show who will say that, no, this is not true. God created it at the same time. The earth is only 50 years old. What kind of people? I don't get that. Can't they have science and religion at the same time? I mean, there's such a thing as carbon dating. It's not a trick of Satan. Every time I've confronted, like, the fundamentalists, they say, well, there's carbon dating, which proves that Paleolithic existed, Mesozoic, etc. No, 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 that's Satan talking, Michael. You've been tricked by Satan. No, you've been tricked by Satan. You can believe in God and you can believe in evolution as well. God may not have created the whole thing all at once. He could have created, set the thing in motion, and then it evolved. That's all. He could have had a little experiment on the side. Consider all the galaxies out there and the other unknown universes, right? So amongst them, there's one planet called Earth. Why should we assume this is God's favorite planet? Why should you assume for 1 minute that of all the billions of bodies in the heavens, this is the only sphere that God liked? And on this sphere, he chose to put Adam and Eve. Why would you assume that? You can live with that fantasy if you wish. I'm not saying you can't live with it. But I suggest you read a little bit on carbon dating. It's not a trick of the liberals, believe me. It does exist. So I want to ask you a question. Since we realize that life is Blake said life is infinite. I don't believe it. I believe life is finite. You know, truthfully, I mean, we have a lifespan and that's it. Oh, it's so depressing. What is the point of brushing my teeth and taking my coenzyme Q and my fish oils? What is the point of pumping my biceps and not eating too many eggs? What is the point of choosing fish when I really want the lamb chops? I ask myself virtually every night. If only at the end of the day the candle is going to burn and all that will be left is a little wisp of smoke, I say to myself every day. Well, I don't have an answer for that other than that's the way it is. I didn't create it. God set it up, right? So if God set it up that way, or nature set it up that way, or chance set it up that way, you live it out. And my number one motto is survival. I learned a long time ago that if you want to know what a single word to get you through everything, survival. Ask yourself what you need to do to survive, whether that's emotionally, physically, mentally, right, financially. It's always about survival. So can I tell you a little secret? Can I pull the curtain back a little bit more? Remember I told you I'm going through my early journals from 1963 and my writings and I have audio tapes of my radio shows going back to 1994. Photos, archives, pictures, Fiji, Tonga, Samoa, plant collections. And all these archives were going to a library at an unknown university because of political decisions behind the scene. They have rejected my archive without any comment. So they're not going to that university. They're going to have to go somewhere else. So I'm in the search now again of a new library home. And there's very few conservative universities that will accept the great library of Michael Savage. There aren't that many, but I will find one or I'll build a library for it. I mean, if Barack Obama, could you imagine what would be in Barack Obama's library? Can you imagine any such thing? I can't imagine. What would you put in that? Bill Clinton's library, the LIE-BURY, is a very interesting library. Everything that he didn't put in the library is what I like to see. I mean, the centerpiece of Bill Clinton's library would of course, be the purple dress in the rotunda as you walk in. And like a round glass thing, here is the dress that almost brought down his presidency were it not for Dan Rather and the other members of the government media complex conspiracy. But Bill Clinton's library, what would be in Barack Obama's library? What would you put if you were to want to get even with this scoundrel for what he's doing to this country and Western civilization in general? I think this is a good topic. I'm starting to feel it's a very good topic. What would you put in Barack Obama's library for the world to know about for years to come, assuming it all goes on? So I'm going through, why are you calling me at 855-107-282 on that one? Zero. I got the Airbnb callers, Airbnb. We have an Airbnb caller? I'm going to get one in a minute. Do I have any takers on that subject? Do you want me to stick to the Muslims and the this and the blow up and the planes and the Libya and the Benghazi and the IRS? I can't do it. The IRS and the Benghazi. We know what he did. We know who he is. We know he's relentless. We know he's unstoppable. We know there's no opposition party. We know there's no newspapers. We get it. But in the middle of fighting this battle for you every day as your warrior in person, Michael Savage, every once in a while I have to veer off course and follow my own heart and my own mind. And right now I want to go off course a little bit. Could be I ate too much jam. I don't know. But I was going through my journals, and I found some things along the way that I thought I'd share with you. But I'm not going to do it right now. Instead, I'm going to take an Airbnb horror story call. I personally, again, think that's a good topic. I think that the ugly dresses in San Francisco's social circle is a fabulous story. And I told you that people used to ask me, Michael, why do you live in San Francisco if you despise these cretinous liberals so much? And I've told you, why did Voltaire live in Paris? You don't even know who Voltaire is, but why did Voltaire? He didn't invent the volt. He didn't define the volt. He died before electricity was discovered by John Wilkes Booth. If I actually said that, most Americans wouldn't know any of my references. That's how dumb people have become. I mean, that's a funny joke, but you need to have gone to at least the third grade in the 1950s to understand that joke. No, Voltaire didn't define the volt. But the thing is, Voltaire lived in Paris, and he ridiculed the sophisticates of Paris. They said, well, why do you live in Paris if you hate it so much? He says, my dear, he said, where else would I find such fodder for ridicule? That's why I live in Nancy Pelosi's backyard. Where else could you find such ugly women wearing uglier dresses who think that they're the epitome of style? I would prefer a punk rocker. I mean, that's out of fashion today. I'd rather see a punker than these women. I can't tell you. It's disgusting to see women wear stuff. They should wear like burkas at this stage of their life. You know, there's something to be said for the burka. They ought to bring it into San Francisco as a fashion statement. Maybe put zebra stripes on it or something like that. The different kind of styles on it, but a burka wouldn't be bad when your body goes. I'm not saying time and gravity's been kind to me, but I'm saying, do I have to see it all? Must you let it all hang out? I mean, it's disgusting. Jeannie on the net, welcome to the Savage Nation. What are you calling about? What's on your mind?
Thank you, Dr. Savage. My parents were in the rag business for many, many years, and my mom and I always contended that men design dresses to make fun of and ridicule women. And I think the men just sit back and laugh and say, oh, look what I designed, and she actually spent $25,000 on this, and she wore it. And so
yeah. I agree with you 100%. You've got to go to this panel I got from the San Francisco newspaper. I've never seen anything like this in my life. They're the most, they're just clumsy looking, horribly looking. I've never seen anything like this in my life.
Yeah, it's disgusting. And, you know, she probably paid $25,000 for it. But the woman in yellow, does she look like Tweety Bird?
Do you see the pictures? Have you looked at them?
I'm at it right now. She looks.
Oh, and who was the Russian trying to stand out?
Oh, my Lord.
And the one with the two things sticking out on the side? I mean, you know she's from Russia because she has the ugliest dress.
Well, you know.
How do you tell the nouveau riche from Russia at a society gala? She's wearing the most disgusting dress of all.
That's a good one.
Now, where was your father in the rag trade?
Southeastern Arizona. My mom and dad. My dad retired from the U.S. Army and owned a ladies' boutique for about 15 years. And
oh, yeah? Not bad. Did you have a brother that worked in the dressing rooms or what?
We did have men come in and try on the lingerie. It was hilarious. We had cross.
Oh, really? Many of the Army fellas did a little switcheroo?
It wasn't the Army. I think it was just people passing by in this small town. But that was in the early 70s.
What do you mean? A lot of guys like women's lingerie. Is that really true?
Well, he came in, and we were getting ready to close the store, and we opened up the dressing room thinking it was empty. And there was this man in bra and panties. And we're just, you know, this is, you know, 1969, 1970.
That's pretty wild. But, you know, when you think about men's underwear, that's not such a bad idea. I mean, at least the women's underwear is softer.
Yeah, you guys.
I mean, maybe guys are just jealous that the fabric is better.
I think so.
So you were you think that some of the designers purposely designed these dresses to ridicule the women?
Absolutely. You know, this past week, the Wall Street Journal that we get every day, on Saturday was their fashion thing. And I turned to my husband and I said, isn't this just heinous? You know, they're showing high-heeled sneakers with anklets and these garishly long, ugly dresses and these horrible fabrics. And these models walk down. They have pale faces. They look like they don't have a stitch of makeup.
It's funny. I was in New York like last week. I was there just before the fashion industry arrived, and we were walking down in the West Village down near the Hudson River where the boat was moored, and you saw these stunning models walking around in civvies, so to speak, you know, just jeans and shirts. I mean, they look great in like wearing those outfits rather than the gowns.
Yeah, but you put on, you know, a designer, I don't want to, you know, mention names, but they're hideous, and they make them walk with these, you know, sourpuss looks on their faces, you know.
Yeah, that I don't get. They all look very, you know, the faces twist.
Yeah, what happened to the beautiful
woman? I don't know. What happened to the smiling woman? Why does the woman have to look pissed off in order to be sexy? I don't get that one. Thanks for that call. It's now, before we go to the break, I have a song that I want to see. It's called I Only Have Eyes for You by the Flamingos. Robert, if you can get that ready, that's a but-up song. I Only Have Eyes for You, but-up. And the phone number is 855-407-282. If you get to talk about politics, if you get to talk about style, you want to talk about Airbnb horror stories, you don't have it? I don't have the minute to develop. I can't develop it. I can tell a whole 15 minutes anecdote right now about this song. This is connected to Love by the Sewer Plant, the accident, Uncle Murray's Plymouth, the car wreck on the side of the road with the bodies, the Jewish hotel owner beating up the busboy who wouldn't listen to him. I have a multitude of stories I would like to tell you about, all of you young listeners to the Savage Nation. And I will do so, along with the news, views, and reviews right here on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. We're in all the way home with Michael Savage, taking you home to the evening. 55 minutes after the hour on the Savage Nation. I can't talk about ISIS today. I'm tired of it. I've had all of the lemon ISIS I can take, the orange ISIS, the chocolate ISIS. I don't want any more ISIS. Just kill them all. Kill them all and their fellow travelers and throw their families out of the countries that they're in. Get them off welfare. Kick them out. I'm sick of it. What do you want me to say? What do you want me to say that doesn't make sense? They're at war with us and we're not at war with them. It's World War II, my friend. And the Nazis have declared war in America and they have fellow travelers here in America in the Nazi party, and you're not supposed to notice they're here. They're marching around with swastikas. They're dancing to the Horst Wessel song and say, oh, well, they're Americans. They're entitled to have a swastika and call for the death of America. No, you round them up and throw them out. That's all. Send them on a one-way ticket. I could raise the money. We could raise the money on this show. How many of you would raise money, give me money to charter a couple of ocean liners and put the fellow travelers' families on it with a one-way ticket to hell? I think I could raise a few million dollars in about a day. One-way tickets. One-way tickets. All meals provided to their country of choice. Maybe Patagonia wants them. You want to save Western civilization? Then save it. And stop talking about it already.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Logical nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
The world is a mess. Elvis has been dead a long time. So is America. Welcome to the show. Look at the top of the Drudge Report. I'm not going to talk about Joan Rivers. I'm sorry. I have nothing to say that's good or bad. I just don't care. Just another comedian. She's dead. I'm sorry. Goodbye. It's not the biggest story. Look at this story. One person commits suicide every 40 seconds. That's a great story. That's very cheerful. What else is in the news? I don't know. Lowest poll numbers of his presidency. Big. Very exciting. As far as I'm concerned, he has a zero poll rating for the day he started. That's all. Poll rating. Up, down, really matters. The idiots know what's going on. If they knew what's going on, he would have been arrested a long time ago. But all right, that's the story. Oh, so in the last hour, I asked you, since all the presidents create libraries, There's the Carter Presidential Library, in which there's the famous peanut. There is the Reagan Library, where they have an aircraft carrier inside of it or whatever. There's always symbolic, something symbolic. In the imaginary Clinton Library, there should be the pink dress with the stain with the dress, rather than the dress with the stain, blood out, you know, in a rotunda, like in glass, like Mao Zedong's remains. But they never put in the library what you want. That's why they're called libraries, because they bury their lies elsewhere. And what they put in their library is a cover-up. It's basically a laundry for donors. What do you think presidential libraries are? They're laundries for donors. A wash job. That's all. What are you, that naive? No one's done a movie on that. I'm surprised. The guy lives on a 485,000-foot yacht, the top of the pinnacle in Hollywood. You think he'd buy that story? That presidential libraries are nothing but laundries, and that they use to cover up all of the scoundrels' real, you know, events. So in since we're creating a verbal library for Barack Obama, not to be disrespectful in any manner, what would you put in a library? And if you were, let's say, you were the librarian in chief, I know what I'd put in my library. My journals, which are quite revealing. I mean, I'm going through them now. I don't know that I may burn them all at one point. God. You know, I'm reading journals I wrote when I was 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, all the way through. Some of it's really, I don't know. I'm going to have to burn them. That's going to be a hard thing for me to do. I may throw all of it in a fire, including all my audio tapes. I mean, it would be a loss. I could sell handwritten pages for my journals at, let's say, $1,000 a page or more, framed, signed. But I'm not going to, I may burn them all. Who's going to want to read my journals from 1963 onward? Yes, some of you would, but, you know, my tapes going back to 1994, you'll see they're amazing. Video of me in Fiji collecting plants, interesting. But I don't know, do I really care? The world cares. It's going to blow up one day anyway. Burnout, cinders, Patagonia, dinosaur. What is the point of all of this? It's to live and live well. That's the whole point of it. That's the whole point of it. And do as little harm as you can. It's like doctor, do no harm. At the end of the day, I mean, when you think about it, what's the MO of life? Have as much fun as you can and don't hurt anybody or hurt as few people as you. You're going to hurt some people along the way. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your intentions are. I was almost going to say, I don't care if you're a Catholic priest, but that's almost an oxymoron. So we can't use them as a metaphor for good because, so anyway, I'm saying no matter how good your intentions are, you're going to hurt people along the way. So hurt as few as you can, doctor. And have as good a time as you can. You know, living well is the best revenge, A. But not at all costs, not to take it from others. You know, and you want to give out a little stuff along the way, make people happy, do good, fine. Okay, that's it. And goodbye, Charlie. You know, then you shuffle off the mortal coil. And then what? I don't know why I'm in this mood today. I have no idea why I don't want to do the news. The poor guy's worked from 6 o'clock this morning with 8 pages of sound. That's astonishing. And here I am waxing philosophically on the Savage Nation. What would be in the Obama library? What's the point of living? Maybe I'm depressed. Maybe this is an example of depression. I don't really know. I can't. Look, I'm not my own analyst. My moods move around a little bit. I'm a bit of a quagmire to myself, which is the way it should be. What, I should know everything about myself before I get up in the morning? What's the point of getting up in the morning? I mean, I don't know every word in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, nor do I know every word inside my head. So what I'm saying is I don't know what I'm reflecting right now. I'm so sick and tired of world events, and I'll tell you why. Because kill them or the end of it. Leave me alone already. I'm sick of complaining about ISIS and Muslims and Islam. I'm sick of the thought already about the Islamic blitzkrieg that's taking over the West. I'm sick of it. Do something about it. Leave me alone already. We know what's going on. We know why it happened. We know how it's happening. We know who's behind it. We know what's going to happen if they're not stopped. And so I'd rather talk about soap or dresses or strawberry jam or my Jaguar's coming out of the garage tomorrow after 3 weeks. We found out why it smoked, the 1970 XKE. It was a starter relay switch. Something like that would be more interesting to me. Something like that, I swear to God. I mean, remember the old days of talk radio when I first started? It's very interesting how this medium has changed. It was not all political all day long. That's number one. It was not partisan all day long. That's number two. It was not either Republican or Democrat talking points, number three. It was not president bashing all day long. That's number four. It was diverse. I mean, you had guys on radio who were good. They would do a segment on photography when you still had photography. They have a guy on with a camera. I know the guy who did it because he got free filming. He was a real chiseler. But it was an interesting segment. A local Schmendrick, but he would have a guy. See, that's the problem is they'd have a lot of these guys on to get free stuff. They have a guy on with the camera stores. He'd come on and talk about how, you know, F 4.D and the dark with the hood and how to do it and what film. It was kind of interesting. Now with a digital camera, you can't even talk about photography. It's automatic. It's like press a button on the iPhone. Well, no one even uses a camera anymore. I went on my trip to New York because I took an HD camera with me. You know, camcorder, whatever. Beautiful job. But the people who had the iPhones, the pictures were clearer. I couldn't believe it. Like, everything is outdated the next second. So what's the point of talking about? So you could put segments in on radio in those days. It wasn't all politics all day long. You know where I stand politically. And when there's news, I'll talk about it. But, I mean, it's got to be more in life than the devils in the White House. How about the devils in the details? I mean, the fact of the matter is, the doctrine of devils is more interesting to me than the devils in the details or the doctor in the White House. That was a heck of a book, The Doctrine of the Devils. Does anyone know that book? See, here is another problem of mine. I may be too esoteric for talk radio. It may be too many years of reading, too many years of writing, too many years of quipping, too many years of clipping, too many years of whipping in order for me to do a show without losing some of the audience that doesn't understand my references because I've read too widely. I'm not boasting. But it's true. If I make a reference to Voltaire, no one knows who he is. You think the average person out there knows who Voltaire is? Why should they? If I say Dostoevsky, they don't know who it is. They think it's the name of a rock group from Queens. Dostoevsky and the Five Knights. Or, well, maybe they heard of Tolstoy. It's a bagel shop in Brooklyn. I don't know what it. Or let's say they're calling them ISIS. So I get mad at the acronym because it's too nice. Right? So I rename them IKK, the Islamo Klux Klan. That's a funny thing. How many people understand it? No one. So that's what I'm saying to you. I mean, Joan Rivers, what can I say about it that's nice? Nothing. I personally don't like that sense of humor. Too caustic for me. I do the caustic jokes, not her. Symbol shot. I'm sorry. Okay. It's not. I'm not ridiculing. May she rest in peace. If there is a heaven, I hope to God she's there with my mother. But my mother got there first, Joan. Let me tell you that. Don't try to up her. Don't try to top my mother. She's been there 10 years now. Don't go in there and think you're going to run to the front of the bus line. It's not Queens circa 1950. My mother's been there since 10 years now already. You want to have an imaginary thought. My mother's in heaven cooking for God. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? Then I watch World War II footage. Worse yet, I'm watching World War I documentaries. Millions of white guys laying in the mud, killing each other for no reason. Millions of white men butchering each other. The British, the pride of New Zealand, farm boys more handsome than a Ralph Lauren model. Boys so good looking you could cry. Killed before they even could begin walking. For nothing. Nothing. Millions of them butchering each other because some fat old stupid men's egos got twisted out of shape. That's why I watch these documentary movies. I don't know if I can watch them anymore. If I was on my own psychiatrist, I'd say, hey, Savage, don't watch any of these movies about dead men anymore. It's no good. Then World War II, right? I really love watching that. All the boys who stormed the beaches, Anzio, Normandy, Iwo Jima, they stormed the beaches so that Barack Obama could be president and stick a knife in the Statue of Liberty's heart. That's why they stormed the beaches. That's why they took out machine gun nests. That's why they threw themselves on hand grenades so that Eric Holder can stir up one race against the other. Yeah, right. It's depressing. I mean, the truth is, it's very depressing. I'm giving you a very dark view of the world right now. I'm liable to get really angry in a minute. I'm trying to avoid it. See, when I get into this comedic, sarcastic, sardonic sense of humor, something bad's coming. It's like a migraine. It's like a pre-migraine of the radio. Something's brewing down there in the coffee pot of my mind. Something's brewing, and I don't know what it is yet. It's going to come up. It can come up when I'm off the air. That's what I'm afraid of. Then I'll really have trouble. I'll really have to start breaking eggs and light bulbs. As long as I don't cook the light bulbs, I'll be fine. Let's go to the funny thing, and let's see if we can have some fun. What would you put in the Barack Obama presidential library? L-I-E-B-U-R-Y. Let's begin with Kevin on KSMO. Kevin, what would you put in the library of Barack Obama?
Hello, Michael. What I would put in there is the hologram of the Nobel Peace Prize, and behind the hologram of the Peace Prize to show just how this president is treating our country is a picture of Ambassador Stevens as his body is being pulled out of the embassy.
Oh, that would be a nice hologram.
Yeah.
All right. That's a good one. That's a good one. That's a good one for the library. Very good. Very good. What would you put in the, I almost said Clinton library. It's like a redo. What would you put in the Obama library if you were the librarian or you were hired as a consultant? I'm trying to think what I would put in there. There's so many choices. It's amazing. Let's see. The complete works of Karl Marx would be in Saul Alinsky's sayings, the early poetry of Saul Alinsky. Burn, baby, burn. On loudspeakers, if you come in, it would be H. Rap Brown. Stokey Carmichael, Hokey Carmichael, whatever his name was. Was his name Hokey Carmichael or Stokey Carmichael? I don't remember. Remember all of those characters of the 60s? All the bebop, they gave you all of the jive. Oh, man, were they jive artists. God, look where we are today. KCML Roger, what would you put in the Obama library?
Well, I've comprised a list of things. First of all, I'd put in his adoption papers when he was adopted by Soterra there in Indonesia, his stepdad. And then also I would put in his Islamic ring that he wears on his finger and a copy of his Muslim family tree and the college application for a student loan that's only available to foreign students. And his college transcripts and his book that states that he was born in Kenya. And his Facebook.
And that's just for starters.
Yeah, that's a nice way to start there on the library.
Right. And where would you go from there, Roger? That's a very good start to the library, the Obama library. What would you put in next?
Well, I would put in the investigation of how come Mrs. Fuddy, who was Secretary of Vital Statistics of Hawaii, how she was mysteriously murdered.
That's an interesting one. She was on a plane. The plane went down. They all survived except her. It was not too late. And she drowned.
Yeah.
Actually, she died of a heart attack in the water.
That's what they say.
Well, you want me to put one in there that's bothered me for a long time? Do you remember just before he was elected, his mother was lingering on her deathbed and he went over and visited her?
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
And you remember she died that night or something?
Yeah.
What was that about?
Oh, gosh, I can't think.
You think that was just good timing, that he got there just in time?
No, it's all everything that happens has happened for a reason. It's all, I don't know. This list that I put together, I just put together in like a minute or two. I could come up with a whole bunch of other things also.
All right, Roger, let's get your email address. The time is 20 minutes after the hour. At the bottom of the hour, I have a real big treat for you out there. Christina Hoff Sommers on 5 Feminist Myths That Will Not Die, right here on The Savage Nation.
Join The Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. The only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-CO-I-N. So the FBI threat assessment omits Islamic terror. This just came out from the Washington Free Beacon. The so-called FBI's most recent national threat assessment for domestic terrorism makes no reference to Islamist terror threats, despite Boston Marathon bombing, 094 shooting carried out by radical Muslim Americans. Instead, the internal FBI intelligence report concluded in its 2013 assessment published this month, remember who they answered to, Eric Holder, who was the most divisive man in the country, that the threat to U.S. internal security is limited by 8 types of domestic extremist movements, none motivated by Islam. Are you ready for this? Nationalists, anarchists, violent animal rights and environmental extremists, black separatists, pro-abortion activists, Puerto Rican nationalist, not one word about Islam or Muslims. We are in such deep tomato soup.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Well, now we go to one of my favorite guests, Christina Hoff Sommers, who's a former philosophy professor. And she's probably best known to you as a critic of late 20th century feminism. She wrote great books, including Who Stole Feminism in 1995, The War Against Boys in 2001, One Nation Under Therapy in 2005, and The Science on Women and Science in 2009. Today, she joins us on The Savage Nation to talk about five feminist myths that will not die. Christina Sommers, welcome back to The Savage Nation.
Oh, great to be here.
Do you remember the early days back in the 90s when I had you on?
Yes, the days of the culture war.
When we before we lost it.
Well, it's funny. I think we won the argument, but the other side won all the assistant professorships.
Yeah. You know, before we begin on the feminist myths that are being put out there, Christina Hoff Sommers, can we ever save this culture? Can it ever be resuscitated?
Oh, I'm an optimist. And I think it was the historian Paul Johnson who said, Americans are terrible at creating problems. They create problems that devastate them and bring them to the brink. But he said we're also the world's greatest problem solvers. And so I think that this too shall pass and that we'll...
Yeah, but Christina, that's when we were still America. But with the influx of people who don't even speak English, who don't know our culture, who don't have our I don't know how to put it other than to say it like it is our basic cultural foundation. How can we ever say America can be saved again?
I don't know. I was looking at data on immigrant families and just a cross-section of people in the country, and most do believe in the American dream. And
wow.
They do think that... there's still, they still believe in the work ethic and in patriotism. I mean, you really can't go by, because of my five myths about feminism, which are repeated constantly in the media, you really can't go by the picture that you get of the country from.
Okay, so what's myth number one that's put out by the Falsehood Society?
Myth number one, this is everywhere, especially at the World Bank, at Oxfam, at the UN, and Young Women Read, that women are half the world's population, they do two-thirds of the work, they receive 10% of the income, and they own less than 1% of the world's property.
And what are the facts?
Well, the facts are this was just made up by somebody at the UN back in the 80s. It got into feminist textbooks and fact sheets. First of all, nobody really knows the answer, but we do know that even in Africa today, Cheryl Doss, a scholar at Yale, found that ownership of land by women ranged from 11% in Senegal to 54% in Rwanda and Burundi. So it has no truth, but yet young women read it, and a lot of these myths are used as a kind of propaganda to persuade young women that society is failing them. I don't think it's a good message to give to young women today, because our society is an opportunity society. Young women probably don't have it as many opportunities anywhere as they do here, and yet they're this false and this bad information.
All right, so look, your myths now, the next one is amazing. We hear this one. Myth two, Christina Hoff Sommers, you're on. What's the second large myth that women are told?
Between 100,000 and 300,000 girls are sold into sexual slavery each year in the U.S.
Wow.
Now, this fictoid, it's a sensational claim. It's a favorite of celebrities. Jimmy Carter repeats it. Jimmy Carter said that the slavery of young girls in America is worse than slavery in America in the 19th century.
Well, Jimmy Carter also says that Islam is a religion of peace, and he received hundreds of millions of dollars a year from radical Islamist groups, but we won't go into Jimmy Carter. Of course Jimmy Carter would distort that.
So also, it's just everywhere. It's been in the New York Times and it was Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher sent it out in a tweet, and they developed a whole program around it. Well, the Village Voice, of all newspapers, they did an investigation, and they tried to find out its source. And it was from a study done at the University of Pennsylvania in 2001. Not even a study, it was a report.
Oh.
And two professors, they didn't say that 100 to 300,000 female children were being abducted and pressed into slavery. They said that many children were at risk for exploitation.
Oh.
And apparently they counted every runaway and so forth.
Oh.
Well, one of the authors the Village Voice contacted one of the authors and pinned him down, and they said, well, what is the actual number of children who were abducted and pressed into slavery? And he said, oh, well, that would be a few hundred.
So it's not 300,000, it's a few hundred people. Well, just shows you how much Ashton Kutcher knows about anything.
Yeah. Well, that's still a few hundred too many, but these kids are not going to be helped by this massive inflation of their numbers.
And okay, Christina Hoff Sommers, the next myth is, feminist myth. In the United States, 22% to 35% of women who visit hospital emergency rooms do so because of domestic violence. What's the truth?
Less than 1%. Some feminists misread. And yet you have women's studies textbooks telling young women in American college classrooms that domestic violence is as bad in the United States as in Haiti or Uganda. And they bring out this sectoid. So again,
find
that this isn't just sort of random examples. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody confuses statistics. The problem with these feminist statistics is they can't be corrected. They are immune. As one statistician said, they're harder to kill than a vampire. Should we move on? Statistics.
Wait, this is interesting. You say that 37% of the women who visit emergency rooms were attacked by intimates. So how does that differ from domestic violence?
Oh, no. Here's what they did. About, I think, approximately 40 million women go to emergency rooms, and they took that number. They make it sound like every time you go to the emergency room, almost, you know, more than a third of the people there were attacked. They were confused with the study, the 37% refers to about 500,000 who go to emergency rooms.
Okay.
Or violent-related injuries.
So the correct figure is not 33% of the women who come in are there for domestic violence. It's less than half of 1%, right?
Right.
Okay, so now this is a great one, and Christina Hoff Sommers is the best of the best. I've always loved your books. What's myth four?
Myth four is that one in... you hear this everywhere. One in the United States right now... 1 in 5 college women will be sexually assaulted.
No.
Now, this incendiary figure is everywhere right now. And it's coming from the White House. It's coming from every news story. It's just the kind of showcase factoid. Well, the 1 in 5 figure, it's based on a survey called the Campus Sexual Assault Study. And two prominent criminologists recently critiqued it in USA Today. And they noted that this study was based on a bad non-representative sample. It had overly broad questions. If you ever had, you know, someone that did an attempted to kiss you, and that was classified as a form of sexual violence, as an assault.
Now, well, Christina Hoff, this is what they're doing in the military. The same distorted garbage is being used to purge the military of men and replace them with radical feminists, is it not?
The studies in the military, and this was written about brilliantly by a woman who is in the military, who's a lawyer, and she wrote in the Wall Street Journal about how they misuse statistics. And they used an unscientific method, an internet. They're using the internet surveys, and so anybody that chooses, I mean, they had a... In the case of the young women, they chose two universities, but it was just a very low response rate to very general questions. And by the way, you cannot say to a young woman, like, were you sexually assaulted or were you raped? What they do is they ask sort of vague questions, and then the researchers determine what happened. Because if you ask the girls, they will give you another answer that the researcher apparently doesn't want, and you'd get a low figure, and that's not good enough for the
Haven't they changed what the definition of rape is? Rape is, to me, one of the most horrible crimes on the planet, and I've said that. Real rape. But haven't they loosened the definition to include what you mentioned, what, touching someone on the shoulder and saying you're cute? Is that considered sexual assault now in the military?
Well, let's stick to this campus study, because this is all over the media. In the campus study, they consider it rape if you have an intoxicated hookup. And I would say that that's just too broad a definition. I mean, of course, we would all agree it was rape if the girl was unconscious or, you know, completely incapacitated. But they're enlarging the definition, and you can get what looks like an epidemic if you enlarge the definition of rape to include, inebriated intercourse.
Now, well, and that would include, think of how many men would be claiming that they've been raped if that was a definition.
CDC made the mistake of asking men, and they also have found an epidemic.
If you say you're inebriated and you had sex, and it included men saying, they'd say, well, then I was raped because I was drunk.
Well, it happens. But a yes answer, you automatically counted as a rape or assault victim. And that means that, I mean, if you think about it, it would mean that we'd have to classify a fair amount of sexual intercourse, even among married people, as rape, because they.
Well, that's what the. But isn't that what the radical feminists want to do? Is drive men and women apart?
You know, I think they are so misguided, and what I'm trying to convey is that women are going to be helped by truth. Women, and there are women who are victims. There are real problems, and if you want to help, then get the facts right. Have rigorous studies. Find out what the real problems are. Because if you don't have a good definition, you can't send resources in the right direction. You just trivialize a problem. You create compassion fatigue in the public.
Right.
And,
but you, as a critic of radical feminism for so long now, in your great books, Who Stole Feminism, The War Against Boys, this is really a continuation of the very same themes that you've been writing about all these years. It is a war, and it's a war that's using junk science now.
Yes, well, I think a lot of journalists don't realize it. I think probably the White House doesn't realize it, that the it's almost as if the information on women is coming from these women's studies departments or these women's activist groups, and they're not reliable, and they don't represent most women, and they're the kind of brain trust on women. But there's no quality control, very little quality control.
Yeah, but coming from the people who say things such as being said today by Obama or Kerry, this is not surprising from my point of view. Give us the last myth, femmyth, please, myth five.
Mother of all feminist factoids. Women earn 77 cents for every dollar a man earns for doing the same work.
Truth is?
Oh, God, no matter how, this has been refuted so many times, even by feminist economists. The bottom line, the truth, that 23-cent gender wage gap, that's simply the difference between the average earnings of all men and women working full-time. I mean, it doesn't take into account differences in occupation or hours worked per week, job tenure, education. And if you factor in all the relevant factors, the wage gap narrows to the point of vanishing. Mm-hmm. And, the feminist activists will come back and say, oh, no, even men and women that work in the same field, women earn less. But, and that is often true, but they usually leave out critical variables. And I ask, like, how does this help women? There are problems. Women do face problems in the workplace. So do men. And I think we'll all be better off with good information. But it's going to take a huge battle to get rid of these factoids.
Christina Hoff Sommers, your last message to women's advocates is take back the truth. Isn't that correct?
Well, to women. I don't know if the advocate. Well, some of the advocates are good-hearted, and maybe they're even taken in. I don't know. This is out of control. It's not helping women. If you want to help women, then reform the research and bring in critics and bring in the adults, because it's driving social policy in crazy direction. We have this myth now of a campus rape culture, and a young man, parents, I warn you, people believe that the average young man is a potential rapist, because if one in five girls is being attacked, who's doing it? And so they're putting these young men through these demeaning workshops. These are kids that are going to college and being treated as potential perpetrators. And her.
I know, and then the guys come out as guilty, perpetrators, and the girls come out feeling like they were victims. Well, good work, Christina Hoff Sommers. Always a pleasure to have you on the radio, and I wish you tremendous success in your continued endeavors. Thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation. It is now 49 minutes after the hour. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-COIN. All right, we go back to regular programming on the Savage Nation with Airbnb horror stories. Let's go to Portland, Oregon. Jeff, KUFO. Jeff, give us your Airbnb horror story.
Hi, Michael. I'm from Portland, Oregon. Basically, one of my aunts, she rents her place on an Airbnb, and she rented it out, and two young doctors just out of college, they rented it, and they brought prostitutes to the house, and they just ruined it. They wrecked the whole house. They broke chairs and tables and just made a mess.
Where these are, like, normal doctors? Or?
I don't know. They were from Vancouver, B.C. They just were wild. But they left
wow.
a mess, and of course they had to.
So you mean they used the Airbnb temporary rental just as a hotel room, in essence, and had a party?
Basically, yeah. And they've had this multiple times. It's been an ongoing issue.
Why would anyone rent out their house or apartment for a few bucks with the potential for hookers, drugs, bed bugs, people on your sheets? Who would do that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I'm
getting nervous just thinking about it. Thanks for the call. I mean, I have to throw my washing machine out if I ever rented my house out for the night. I'd have to replace the dishes, the glasses. I'd have to re-wax the floors, have the ceiling painted. It's the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Rising like a phoenix. Here's a little story from London, Londonistan, the once English city. Woman found beheaded in London Garden. Nice row houses, thatched houses of the type I grew up in Queens, New York, once inhabited by a middle-class Englishman, now inhabited by welfare recipients from Pakistan and elsewhere. A woman was found beheaded on Thursday in a back garden in North London. Police discovered the body in the suburb of Edmonton. Said a man with a knife was attacking a cat or a dog. The police would not confirm reports that she had been beheaded. A 25-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion of murder. Of course, they wouldn't say who did it at all. And here's what the police had to say in Londonistan. Whilst, and I'm repeating his words, whilst, that's a word that's not used on this side of the Atlantic, W-H-I-L-S-T, whilst, I'm sure it'll be used by the women in those funny dresses in San Francisco, whilst it is too early to speculate on what the motive behind this attack was, I am confident, based on the information currently available to me, that it is not terrorist-related, said the police in Londonistan. Does it make me a racist to guess that it may not be terrorist-related, but it was Muslim-related? Would that be racist to think that? Would it be racist to say that while he was yelling Allah Akbar and running over the hedges, that we can make certain assumptions? No. But you see, England is about to go through a revolution. England now has a right-wing party that's originated. It's really not right-wing. It's an English party. They're terrified of it because it really represents English and the Englishmen and the Christians. And it's called the UKIP party. And UKIP has a man with a stunning voice. I pray to God he... You know, he's ahead in the polls by like 50, 40 points. His name is Farage. I want you to listen to clip number 3.
We've seen increased radicalization within the United Kingdom. Much of this, I'm afraid to say, is a self-inflicted wound. We've had 4 decades of state-sponsored multiculturalism. We've actually encouraged people not to come together and to be British, but to live separately, to live apart.
Mm-hmm. That's just what Holder and Obama are doing on a daily basis, driving people apart and flooding America with cultures that will never, ever assimilate. Now listen to Farage in the next clip, because this is what we need in America.
We even had the last Archbishop of Canterbury suggesting that Sharia law would be acceptable in British cities. So I'm afraid we have been weak, and we have not been muscular in standing up and saying to people, we are a Christian country. We have a Christian constitution, a Judeo-Christian culture. We allowed our schools to be infiltrated. Our prisons, you know, are now perhaps where jihadism is on the march more rapidly than anywhere else. Much of this we've done to ourselves.
What would you do in America if one candidate on the Republican side ever said this here in this country? Would you contribute to such a candidate? I would. I'd work for him for free. Can you imagine? Have you heard any candidate in this country on the Republican side ever say a word like this? Not one word has been said, and we all know what needs to be said to save this country before it goes past the proverbial point of no return. We have other sound that I have to play for you, because it's such a good sound day. But before we do that, right here on the Savage Nation, we have to continue with some of our great callers from the last hour, where I speculated, what would you put in the forthcoming Obama library, L-I-E-B-U-R-Y? WABC in New York City. Tom, what would you put in the library?
The only appropriate display for the Obama library would be an empty suit. And maybe a telephone and a pen.
Yeah, that would work. That would be the whole museum. That would be the entire display.
And by the way, was that lady that was speaking very early, a very smart lady, was she referring to Debbie Wasserman Schultz and her comment about Scott Walker?
Oh, you mean the guest I had on, Christina Hoff Sommers? Do you think that there will be there has to be an Obama library. They all have one, don't they? But the question is, which country will it be? And it doesn't belong in America. I mean, should the Obama library be in, I'll give you 3 choices, Indonesia, Hawaii, or Kenya?
Mike, you said something the other day about some of these oldies you play, and I grew up in New York City, born and raised, singing under the streetlights, and I really, all these years, appreciate listening to all that. And I spoke to you once before. I'm a Vietnam vet, dog handler, and I talked to you about Teddy. So
a dog handler from Vietnam. You're one of those guys. And what did you use the dogs for in the Nam?
Well, we've had at least 4,000 of them over there, and then less than 200 came back. They were used for scouting, sentry work, hunting, search and rescue type stuff. They were used for so many things. They saved approximately 10,000 lives. There'd be another 10,000 names on that wall down in D.C. if it wasn't for them.
Unbelievable. People don't realize how remarkable our dog friends are. I mean, they were a beautiful creature, really are. Do you have a dog today, Tom?
Excuse me, sir?
Do you have a dog today? I mean, do you have a dog at home?
I have a shelter rescue that we got. It's Akita mix. Akita Chow Shiba Inu mix. Beautiful dog. Beautiful.
Oh, they're a tough dog. The Akita's a rough animal, and so is the Chow.
They are.
I had a Chow when I was a kid. A paw chow, he's the one who ripped my leg open.
Oh, boy, they're beautiful. These
no, he went for my foot. It was like a chicken bone to him. He went right through the flesh.
I put up a memorial to the war dogs out on in Fort Wadsworth, the Coast Guard base now in New York City, where the Verrazano Bridge comes down. Base there. I put up a memorial dedicated in 2004 to all these dogs.
I feel like crying now. I mean, it's a sad story, Tom. I mean, when you think about it, they're so loyal. I mean, these dogs are run into a hand grenade for people, right?
They've done it. They do it, and you see how they are today. And working with servicemen, I'm glad these vets today are being taken care of. And may I say, it's a lot of us Vietnam vets that understand what we went through. When never again will one generation of veterans forget another. And we'll never let that happen again.
Tom, you're going to be the winner today, the Gold Star winner of my my forthcoming bestseller, Stop the Coming Civil War. It's not out yet, but the minute it's available, I'm going to send one to you. So, Tom, please stay on the line. We'll get your address. Very, very touching story. Now, let's go to psychosis. John Kerry, in the following sound bites, needs no introduction. Please listen to clip six.
The face of Islam is not the butchers who killed Stephen Sotloff. That's ISIL. The face of Islam is not the nihilists who know only how to destroy, not to build. It's not masked cowards whose actions are an ugly insult to the peaceful religion that they violate every single day with their barbarity and whose fundamental principles they insult with their actions.
I don't know. Maybe he had too much ketchup. I don't know. I don't know the explanation for this. At a time like this, why is he apologizing for Islam? Why not put them on the defensive, John? Let them explain that they're not them. What are you doing it for them for? I don't. Maybe the sucrose and the ketchup did it. It could be that, you know, that there's said to be health benefits of tomato sauce, tomato paste, tomatoes, ketchup, in the polyphenol compounds that are contained in tomatoes. And I'm a big tomato eater, but it could be that there's a side effect that is showing its ugly head, rearing its ugly head in John Kerry. Listen to clip seven.
The real face of Islam is a peaceful religion based on the dignity of all human beings. It's one where
Wait a minute. Based on the dignity of all human beings, tell that to the woman whose head was just cut off in London. What are you talking about? Well, that must be another one of them who doesn't represent Islam. I'm sorry. So start clip seven again.
The real face of Islam is a peaceful religion based on the dignity of all human beings. It's one where Muslim communities are leading the fight against poverty. It's one where Muslim communities are providing basic health care and emergency assistance on the front lines of some of our most devastating humanitarian crises.
Where are they doing that?
And it is one where Muslim communities are advocating for universal human rights and fundamental freedoms, including the most basic freedom to practice one's faith openly and freely.
Is that why churches are being burned and Christians have been killed in the Middle East? Who's doing that, John? Where are you getting this script from? Now, it gets even worse, and I don't know whether John Kerry has really gone around the bend or not. It's hard to say whether this is the real him or he's actually turned the corner and he'll never, ever be heard from again in a sane society. But it gets even worse. In the next set of sound bites, John Ketchup Kerry says that scripture commands the USA to protect Muslim countries against global warming. I swear to God, this is at a time of beheadings, burying alive, rape, murder, enslavement, burning of churches, killing of Christians. You're not going to believe this. It's too long, but listen to clip 10.
Confronting climate change is, in the long run, one of the greatest challenges that we face. And you can see this duty or responsibility laid out in scriptures, clearly, beginning in Genesis. And Muslim-majority countries are among the most vulnerable. Our response to this challenge ought to be rooted in a sense of stewardship of Earth. And for me and for many of us here today, that responsibility comes from God.
Well, maybe then instead of just giving them M1A Abrams tanks, since ISIS is now vulnerable to global warming and it's our responsibility, according to scriptures, to protect Muslims everywhere from global warming, what must we do for ISIS? We're probably failing them in some way. And in fact, if you analyze Kerry's speech, it could be they're on a rampage and killing Christians and Azidis and other minorities, burying them alive, putting them in slavery because of global warming. It could be that's what's driving them to this extremism, because this is not their religion driving them. According to this administration, it's not the religion driving them. No, not at all. It gets even better. No, we'll keep going. We're going to go to the 30th for sure. There's more on sound that you won't believe this. That's John Kerry, that it's scripture commanding us to protect Muslim countries against global warming. How did they do this? How did they do this? How did they do it? I mean, his wife, Teresa Hines Kerry, must have some semblance of what's going on in that house. You know, when I was doing my, I can't say it, people get mad at me, but when I was working for my doctorate at the University of California at Berkeley, my thesis chairman was the dean of the School of Public Health, and he was a professor of epidemiology. And we had many a nice conversation over Chinese food. Here we go again with the Chinese food in Berkeley. And one of the things he said that I recall to this day is that the first thing that goes in the elderly is the sense of judgment. I believe John Kerry epitomizes that statement, incidentally. That's what I think, because he can't mean any of this. He can't believe any of this. So let's see what else we have in the sound department. Let's go to a quick break, and I'll be right back to play all the sound right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCOIN. So the lunatic John Kerry, who's always been Lurch, I named him Lurch a long time ago because he looks like Lurch, in the middle of all of the beheadings, the madness, the public executions, the crucifixions that take place virtually every day in the Middle East, where women not fully covered in nijabs are lashed with alarming frequency, where store owners who leave their shops open during times of prayer can get beaten or sent to prison, he has the nerve to put out a propaganda piece that would have made Lenny Riefenstahl blush. This would be like Hitler going into cities and killing an American Secretary of State apologizing for Nazism, saying this is not the real face of Nazism. You're seeing a distortion of Nazism. When those carrying out the Nazism were reading Hitler's Mein Kampf. And this is crazy. Did you know that amongst this group that they call ISIS, which is really the Islamo Klux Klan, that philosophy is prohibited? They call philosophy a kind of blasphemy. Do you know that music and sports events have been canceled where they conquer the regions from the school curriculum? Do you know any of this? And yet we have apologists like Kerry going out of their way to talk about the wonders of Islam? Listen to clip 9 now. This is crazy.
Our fates are inextricably linked on any number of things that we must confront and deal with in policy concepts today. Our fates are inextricably linked on the environment. For many,
okay, turn it off. I really can't listen to this law. The man's crazy or a liar or both. How else did he become a top politician? You know, I mean, put two and two together. Let's go to a couple of callers. Bob on KSEV in Houston, Texas. Bob, go ahead, please.
Oh, Michael, you just saved me with the wonderful news. You're going to stay on the air for 20 more years? Yay! Okay, don't have to listen to all the crap news anymore.
Well, thank you. That's a very nice compliment, because I was looking at a newspaper this morning, the New York Post. They showed a woman 96 years old, and I'm not 76. She's 96 years old, and she's a yoga teacher, and she's in great condition, and 30-year-olds can't keep up with her. Would you believe this?
Yes.
I mean, it's astounding. She said it's all mental attitude. She said that she gets up every day. She doesn't think of the past. She doesn't think of the future. She lives for that day only. You know? I mean, it's unbelievable. She's very encouraging. I can't find the story right now. 96 years old, and she has 30, 20-year-olds in her class. They can't keep up with her energy. Would you believe that?
Well, Michael, I'm going to call you when I turn 84, 20 years from now, and
You know, 20 years, I'll be 59 by then. I'm 39 now, so I'm like Jack Benny. I'm going to be 39 forever. You know that. Call me in 20 years, and I'll give you a free copy of Stop the Coming Civil War. By then, it'll be a collector's collector's item. Oh, my God, what a world. What a world with guys like John Kerry in this country. How can we survive two more years of this? How? Can't we have an emergency election?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
We've seen increased
increased radicalization within the United Kingdom. Much of this, I'm afraid to say, is a self-inflicted wound. We've had four decades of state-sponsored multiculturalism. We've actually encouraged people not to come together and to be British, but to live separately, to live apart.
Now, doesn't that sound like Obama? Encouraging blacks to live separately and to live apart. Doesn't that sound like Eric Holder, who in the face of ISIS and the beheadings goes down to Missouri and gives a speech just now trying to agitate more riots in this country? Infidels, please listen to the next soundbite of the new leader of the Western world in clip number four. Hold on, the man has a name. His name is Farage. Never forget, F-A-R-A-G-E. He's the anti-Obama in clip four. Listen.
We even had the last Archbishop of Canterbury suggesting that Sharia law would be acceptable in British cities. So I'm afraid we have been weak and we have not been muscular in standing up and saying to people, we are a Christian country. We have a Christian constitution, a Judeo-Christian culture. And we've allowed our schools to be infiltrated. Our prisons, you know, are now perhaps where jihadism is on the march more rapidly than anywhere else. Much of this we've done to ourselves.
I pray to God that the UKIP party throws the bums out, and I pray that they deport everyone in the prisons who is an Islamist. No trial, get them out of there. Send them where they belong. Send them back to their country of origin with their whole family. Get them off the welfare dole. Do you realize most of these people who are planning to destroy our society are living here on welfare? The number one boy's name in England is Mohammed. How do you like that? What if you woke up and heard that the most popular boy's name in Saudi Arabia was Jerry? That ain't happening. You think you'll ever wake up to the day that the most popular boy's name in Saudi Arabia will be Jimmy? No, I don't think so. But because of multiculturalism forced down our throat by Bill and Hillary Clinton and their minions of psychotics and 40 years of this insanity, the West is almost finished. The blitzkrieg of Islam has now virtually rolled over across the Western civilization. It's almost over. Not quite. And it's not changing in this country. It's getting far worse under you-know-who, under the O-word. But in England, there's hope. They don't like that Muhammad is the most popular boy's name in England. They don't like it at all, and they're sick of it. And they know they had it done to them by the multiculturalists. The Islamoclux clan says that they're at war with us, but we're not at war with them, says the hologram. The losers in the White House say our thoughts and prayers are with Mr. Sotloff and Mr. Sotloff's, Scott Sotloff's family. Shame on you. Shame on you drug addicts in the White House for having the lack of decency. You have you no shame? Have you spokesmouths for the hologram president? Do you lack a gene for humility? Do you lack a gene for compassion? Do you lack a gene for reality? I think so. Our thoughts and prayers are with Mr. Sotloff and Mr. Sotloff's family. So I have to ask you, with this going on, how is it affecting you? Are you having nightmares? Do you fear these animals? Do you think they're going to do something at a mall? Have you prepared for it in any way? Have you changed your life in any way? I mean, there's an awful lot of them here. We've been told they're here. Don't think I'm just some right-wing nut creating a scare tactic, being an alarmist. Your own government, your hologram spokesmouth last week said there's a lot of them here in this country. Where are they? They know there's a lot of them. Where are they? And there's Dianne Feinstein. Chairwoman of the most powerful Senate Armed Services Committee. I realize she's on it for the contracts to make sure they're all kosher. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the most powerful position, the number one contracting agency is the Defense Department. What a cushy job that is, especially if you know someone who does a little defense work, you know, here and there. Not a bad position. So she comes out from under her rock and says, oh, the president's timid. That's the head of the Senate Armed Services Committee. That's the most she could say. I wonder if there's any kind of contracting that'll go on now that someone we might know in the shopping cart business might get a little steerage in. Pardon me for my sarcasm. Keeps me going. Pardon me for my sarcasm. It keeps me alive. Pardon me for my sarcasm. It keeps me from getting totally depressed and enraged. Pardon me for being Michael Savage. Pardon me. But I'm not going to stop. I'm only going to get started now because we're coming to 9/11. Now, I warned you for well over a year now that this corrupt government would try to stimulate insurrection in this country in order to declare martial law. I pray to God I'm wrong. I asked the publisher of my new book, Stop the Coming Civil War, to rush the book. I cannot wait until October. It is now up on michaelsavage.com. You can link it to Barnes & Noble and advance copy right now. Stop the coming civil war. We must stop this corrupt administration from provoking situations to their advantage. And with so many of these throwbacks from the Islamo-Klux Klan running around in this country, according to our own government, it's inevitable that a few of them are going to go off like a Roman candle on 9/11, isn't it? Now, you would think so. You'd think those few of them are going to go off like a Roman candle. But it won't affect you. You got shorts on, your daughter selling lemonade in the suburbs like it's 1952 in Life magazine cover. I don't blame you. You want to put your head in the sand, don't you? So keep taking that Prozac. Keep drinking that bad California Chardonnay. And keep wearing those shorts and keep on golfing. Oh, yeah, keep up the golfing. Above all, keep up the golfing. Pay no attention to the Islamo-Klux Klan around you. Well, someone else will take care of it. It won't affect me. Mac, the masked executioners on the YouTube video say, I'm back, Obama. And I'm back because of your arrogant foreign policy towards the Islamic State, because of your insistence on continuing your bombings in a Mosul dam, blah, blah, blah. So in other words, that's the excuse that this homicidal psychotic maniac uses, along with his Quran, to cut a man's throat who has no opportunity to defend himself. See, these are homicidal maniacs using the Quran, their holy book, as an excuse or as a weapon to mask their homicidal psychosis. So how does that affect us? You say there's not enough of them to bother us. We're an island unto ourselves. We should practice isolationism. And I understand that. We got sucked into the quagmire of Iraq once before. I remember that. I seem to remember that we got sucked into this quagmire once before. The problem was manifold in the last time we got sucked in. Bush persecuted many men, mainly U.S. Marines and Army Rangers, some of whom I've helped. You know that. I don't have to forget my halo. You know who they are. They were persecuted by George Bush's cowardly punks in the military and given court-martials for doing their job. And what did they do wrong in Iraq? These men were rotting at Fort Leavenworth as I speak to you. They killed the enemy before the enemy had a chance to kill them. They shot them in the belly before the Islamo-fascists got their gun away from them and was able to shoot them in the stomach. And for that, they violated George Bush's rules of engagement. Yeah, you heard me. So if you think that this flood of insanity that has paralyzed this nation began with Obama, you're mistaken. It began a long time ago. It's just that it's been metastasized now almost to the level of point of no return under this guy, the hologram. Now, what can we say about this that hasn't been said? Okay, my friends, we're moving right along here. Let me give you a little domestic story. Here's a headline from Fox News. Bike rider on bucket list trip from Maryland to Miami fatally stabbed. Now, on the face of it, that's a bad story, but you have to read the whole story to find out who stabbed him. You know who stabbed him? Herrera Cruz, a homeless man, stabbed this poor guy who was on a bicycle ride from Maryland to Miami to propose to his girlfriend. He stopped at a McDonald's restaurant, 28 years old, talking to his girlfriend on a cell phone outside the restaurant, when the homeless man, Herrera Cruz, stabbed him to death for no reason. Stabbed him in the chest and the arms, and he collapsed and died. And Cruz told officers he thought that the fellow he stabbed was directing people by cell phone to attack him. Now, the article says bike rider on bucket list, trip from Maryland to Miami, fatally stabbed. I guess they left out by homeless man, and then go to the next step, homeless illegal alien, perhaps. We don't know about the illegal alien, but we know he was homeless. But you can never connect the word homeless with any act of violence, because then you may find out what I've been telling you for 20 straight years, that the so-called homeless population is filled with some of the most dangerous people in the United States of America who belong either in mental hospitals or they're prison escapees. Here in San Francisco, a once beautiful city, the homeless want the right to defecate and urinate in the subways. We have a subway system here called BART. Well, the subways called BART stink so badly from feces that they have to take down the escalators and decontaminate them with biohazard suits. They haven't done it because the writers couldn't take it anymore. They were puking. So finally, Bart hired a team to work exclusively on entrances and stairways in the heavily used stations where these vermin defecate and urinate, okay? We'd all agree that needs to be done, wouldn't we? No. Are you ready for this? So-called advocates for the homeless have slammed Bart's decision to clean the feces and urine out of the stations. Are you ready for this? Here's what Jennifer Friedbach, executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness, told the San Francisco newspaper. They can't sleep on the sidewalks. They can't sleep in the parks. Where do you expect people to sleep? See, she likes the feces and the urine, apparently, in the escalators. So San Francisco commuters are forced to run a gauntlet of feces, puddles of urine, litter, discarded food on the floors, ooze on the walls. So finally, Bart is cleaning it up. And the head of the coalition mafia says, how dare you clean up that feces? They can't sleep on the sidewalks. They can't sleep in the parks. Where do you expect people to sleep? That's San Francisco. It's why I love the city so much. The craziest, sickest city on the planet. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCOIN.
Hot Talk 560. KSFO.
Look, we got the news. The multiculturalism has destroyed the West. Let's hope that this guy Farage and UKIP kicks them out in plain English. Cleans. You start with the jails. And he says, we have a Christian constitution, a Judeo-Christian culture. We allowed our schools to be infiltrated by the Muslims. Our prisons, you know, are now perhaps where jihadism is on the march more rapidly. And he said, much of this we've done to ourselves. Well, you start by going in the prisons and deport them. That's all. You have mass trials and throw them out of your country. That sends a message, a nice one. They want a riot, throw them out. That's all. And then clean the country up. Then maybe the most popular boy's name in England may be John instead of Muhammad. Maybe you could save the country by understanding they're taking you over. Now, I mean, maybe this is shocking for you to hear. Maybe you need to be shocked in order to understand what's going on in this country. While the hags in San Francisco put on dresses they found in a Goodwill store from 30 years ago. 855-407-282. Would you please go to michaelsavage.com and would you at least check out my forthcoming book, Stop the Coming Civil War. It's on the top left. Pre-order it today. Click on it. Look at this story. They found the skeleton, the remains of a new dinosaur from Patagonia. Many of you don't know where Patagonia is. It's adjacent to San Francisco. And it's so big. It's estimated to have weighed 65 tons and was 85 feet long, bigger than any of the animals that ever walked the earth. Can you imagine that? Found a specimen in Argentina's southern Patagonia in 05. They think it's the most massive dinosaur, but there are comparatively sized beasts elsewhere. But that's the heaviest land animal whose weight during life can be calculated directly next to a Rosie O'Donnell with a standard technique. I mean, because it's not alive. But it is the heaviest land animal whose weight during life can be calculated directly other than Rosie O'Donnell with a standard technique that analyzes bones of the upper limbs. And the bones indicate it was still growing when it died. I'm very interested in this kind of stuff, the creature, this kind of creature, to think about that, that what walked the earth before the society folks in San Francisco walked the earth. Just think about that, the size of these dinosaurs. Dinosaurs. Now, of course, there are people listening to the show who say that, no, this is not true. God created it at the same time. The earth is only 50 years old. What kind of people? I don't get that. Can't they have science and religion at the same time? I mean, there's such a thing as carbon dating. It's not a trick of Satan. Every time I've confronted, like, the fundamentalists, they say, well, there's carbon dating, which proves that Paleolithic existed, Mesozoic, etc. No, 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 that's Satan talking, Michael. You've been tricked by Satan. No, you've been tricked by Satan. You can believe in God and you can believe in evolution as well. God may not have created the whole thing all at once. He could have created, set the thing in motion, and then it evolved, that's all. He could have had a little experiment on the side. Consider all the galaxies out there and the other unknown universes, right? So amongst them, there's one planet called Earth. Why should we assume this is God's favorite planet? Why should you assume for 1 minute that of all the billions of bodies in the heavens, this is the only sphere that God liked? And on this sphere, he chose to put Adam and Eve. Why would you assume that? You can live with that fantasy if you wish. I'm not saying you can't live with it, but I suggest you read a little bit on carbon dating. It's not a trick of the liberals, believe me. It does exist. So I want to ask you a question. Since we realize that life Blake said life is infinite. I don't believe it. I believe life is finite, you know, truthfully. I mean, we have a lifespan and that's it. Oh, it's so depressing. What is the point of brushing my teeth and taking my coenzyme Q and my fish oils? What is the point of pumping my biceps and not eating too many eggs? What is the point of choosing fish when I really want the lamb chops? I ask myself virtually every night. If only at the end of the day the candle is going to burn and all that will be left is a little wisp of smoke, I say to myself every day. Well, I don't have an answer for that other than that's the way it is. I didn't create it. God set it up, right? So if God set it up that way, or nature set it up that way, or chance set it up that way, you live it out. And my number one motto is survival. I learned a long time ago that if you want to know what a single word to get you through everything, survival. Ask yourself what you need to do to survive, whether that's emotionally, physically, mentally, right, financially. It's always about survival. I've had all of the lemon ISIS I can take, the orange ISIS, the chocolate ISIS. I don't want any more ISIS. Just kill them all. Kill them all and their fellow travelers and throw their families out of the countries that they're in. Get them off welfare. Kick them out. I'm sick of it. What do you want me to say? What do you want me to say that doesn't make sense? They're at war with us and we're not at war with them. It's World War II, my friend. And the Nazis have declared war in America and they have fellow travelers here in America in the Nazi party. And you're not supposed to notice they're here. They're marching around with swastikas. They're dancing to the Horst Wessel song and say, oh, well, they're Americans. They're entitled to have a swastika call for the death of America. No, you round them up and throw them out. That's all. Send them on a one-way ticket.
Savage.